Now with McDonald's, wake up to a $4 breakfast meal deal. Wake up to a sausage McMuffin or sausage biscuit to hash browns and wake up to a hot coffee. Get your $4 breakfast meal deal.
Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. Prices may be higher for delivery.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.
Third hour, Darren Donick and Chase on this Wednesday afternoon. Beautiful day here in Middle Tennessee. Sunny, beautiful. It's going to be about high 70s. By the way, by Friday, I think the high is supposed to be low 60s. So starting to get a little nippy as we start October tomorrow. Yeah. Flip-flopping.
I had to layer up for the high school soccer game yesterday.
I bet you did. You always are layered up.
We got another one today.
Yep.
It's exciting. High school action.
And how did they do yesterday?
They got a big win yesterday. It was
nice.
Awesome.
Yeah. Very nice.
The USN Tigers, senior captain, goalie, Evans Donick. Nice job.
She pitched a shutout?
No, they got one on her, but it was a good game. It was a 1-1 late in the first half, and then they played an outstanding second half. As I've said on the show, they were very cautious. They didn't start until last week. So this is only their second week of games. They've been practicing, right? But we were all wondering about the sharpness, and man, they found another level yesterday. So that was a key win for them yesterday. They play again today, and then the postseason starts late next week. So they have basically a 3-week regular season, and then it's on for the real deal.
Okay.
Challenge, but it's great to be back out there.
We will keep some close tabs on that.
We had some air high fives on the among the parents and the fans yesterday.
Very
socially
nice.
Distant air high fives.
Very nice. Let's bring in Chris Mason. Our final chat with him. Sad about that, but man, we've had a lot of fun with Chris this 2020 calendar year. It hasn't been a whole lot of fun, but man, we've had fun with him. C-Mace, what's up?
What's up, guys? I did not know that was this is our final one. I am sad now, too. I was happy before, but I'm now sad.
Well, sorry, didn't mean to bring us down well, right
we,
out of the
we
game.
We reserve the right for spot duty when the situation calls.
Yeah, I was
calls.
About to say, like, he's not, you know, we're not sending him off to pasture
no,
or anything.
No,
no. it's just until next time, right? It's not
right.
Goodbye,
no doubt.
It's not goodbye. It's see you later.
See you later.
See you soon.
When, but potentially see you soon, but we really don't know for sure, but we think we will.
Well, that's a good point. Let's just start right there. I mean, do we have any idea, like, what see you soon will be? I mean, now that it's over, I mean, there's going to have to be news on that front here eventually. Where do you think that's headed, the start of next season?
Well, I think draft, obviously, is a huge time for, I think, Nashville, maybe more than ever. I mean, David Poile, I didn't hear it all, but a lot of, you know, pretty big stuff coming out of his press conference and pretty bold statements and pretty very direct and blunt about the team and the situation and who's not coming back. And we've talked about, you know, what they need to do in their lineup. And I think now it's, you know, it's at that time, and the draft is a big part of that. Obviously they got an opportunity to get a really good prospect. We know now, you know, in the National Hockey League, kids are playing in the league a lot sooner and they're making more of an impact in the league at an earlier age. And for the first time in a while, the Preds have some pretty good, you know, high picks in the draft. So this is a big couple weeks here, big, you know, part of the off season for the Predators, no doubt for their future, as a matter of fact. So it's could be sooner than later. We're chatting again about some pretty big stuff.
Yeah, that's a good point. What did you make of David Poile's comments yesterday about Kyle Turris's future here? What did you take from it?
Well, I think it's everything's on the table. There's, you know, they're looking at everything. They're looking at trying to, you know, potentially make a deal. He's talking to GMs. He's trying to, you know, do something that way. He didn't rule out the possibility of him coming back. I mean, there's always, you know, there's a buyout option. He's basically said they're doing everything they can to try to, you know, figure that situation out and, you know, address certain needs and maybe things that they get to clear up some cap space to sign somebody. I don't really get the impression they're going to go make a big splash. But having said that, if you free up, you know, some money and you're obviously, you know, letting Granlin and Smith go to free agency, that's going to, you know, free up some money that they don't have to pick up on those contracts or pay if they were going to get a deal done with them. So it could be interesting. Could be interesting. It was telling that, you know, everything's on the table and they're looking to address that situation in the best way they can. And they're out there actively trying to get that taken care of.
Why do you think, Chris, he told us or told everybody that he's been talking to 10 GMs a day?
I think that he's always been, you know, it's one thing I really respect about David. First of all, his passion and his love for this team and city, but he's always been very open, I think, with the fan base, which I think a lot of people and the media really, really appreciate, because you don't get that in a lot of cities. We're very lucky to have that with him. He's very transparent. But I also think when you say something like that, it's a little bit of posturing, saying, you know, if there is a couple GMs or if there is 10, and you let that be known that maybe one of the GMs that has some interest, maybe they get a little more interested because, you know, David's talking to so many GMs right now. But I also think it tells the fans that, hey, look, I know last year was disappointing. I'm not happy with it. Our players aren't happy with it. And I'll tell you what, I'm on the phone every day. I'm talking to 10 GMs right now. I'm trying to get something done. I'm trying to make this team better. And I think that's a powerful message, and that's something I think the fan base wants to hear. And I think, you know, anyone that's around the team always wants to, you know, if your leader is out there doing everything he can possible to make your team better, I think that's a good sign. And it's nice that he shares that with the fans.
When I used to do shows with Derek Mason, D-Mace, former player, long time in the NFL, who you know, he used to always tell me all the time if he was a GM, he would go out and try to get players, bring in players when warranted, players that understand winning, been in winning organizations, been in winning locker rooms, understand what winning looks, feels, smells like, how to get there. And those are the type of guys, if you're going to go out in the free agent market or ever make a trade, those are the guys that he would identify. Tampa kind of did that, right? I mean, they had an historic regular season last year. They got, as we all know, it's well documented, got bounced in the first round, got swept. And what did they do? We know their roster's loaded, but they went out and got some guys that have been in winning locker rooms. You go out and get a Pat Maroon and Shen. You go out and bring in these guys that, you know, been around the block, have been in winning locker rooms, and they just kind of mix it up with bringing in some new faces and guys that have been through the wars and maybe just bring a different perspective, and it worked. What's your philosophy on that, on guys who have – you put a lot of stock in that or no?
I mean, I do, but, you know, at the end of the day, every single year, a lot of teams do that, but it only works for one team. So
yeah,
I think
true.
I think with Tampa Bay, I think last year, you know, you mentioned the historic season. I think the regular season was maybe one of the best in history last year. I think they had the President's Trophy wrapped up in December, for crying out loud. They were so dominant. And then, you know, it's tough going down the stretch. And we know how that is when the Preds won the President's Trophy. The last, you know, month of the season just doesn't quite feel as urgent as the rest of the entire league, and they end up getting bounced. But I think that experience for that group, you know, helped them, you know, move forward and prepare for what it was like for them this year, so they wouldn't get caught not being ready. Obviously, there's a lot of, you know, unforeseen circumstances that happened this year. But when the hockey started back up, you know, you could just see that this was a very determined team. They're full of talent, and we all know that doesn't guarantee you anything. But I do think they did bring a lot of good pieces. And, you know, it's not like in the offseason you're thinking, oh, Tampa Bay signed Pat Maroon. Wow, they're, you know, going to guarantee themselves a Stanley Cup. But you make a great point, because having those guys in the room, this is a guy that, you know, he scored big goals. He made big plays. He's a physical guy. He makes an impact on your team, and having guys like that in your locker room, it just helps, especially if you have a few of the veteran older guys and guys that have been there and won, just when you're in those, you know, those moments where you could go one way or the other, you could panic or you get a little too high or you get a little too down after a loss or whatever the case may be, you just have that guy in the room or those players that just say, guys, don't worry, it's not a big deal. You know, we lost one game. They got to beat us three more times or whatever the situation may be. Or, you know, you lose a couple of your big players to injury. And, you know, just the way that they just bring, I feel, the balance of where your head's at as a group is so important, because we know, you know, there's so much talent in this league, and the degree of separation is very small. And that mental advantage of having those players on your roster and just, you know, transcends through your hockey team, make all the difference in the world.
Chris Mason is with us. We're talking a little hockey here as we look ahead to the offseason. The draft is next Tuesday night. And Mace, with that, the word is uncertainty. That's maybe the number one word of 2020. But for the NHL, there's a lot to sort out. When will the league start back up? How many games can they play? How many fans can be in the building? And that is going to affect all of the revenue, of course, and it ties back to how much can you spend on your team? How many teams can continue to get to that $81 million cap? How will they approach it? So with all that in mind, what will the uncertainty do to the market in terms of who might be available? And maybe there's more options for David Poile than there would be in a normal year. And then on top of that, you've got to think about the expansion draft the following year.
Well, yeah, I mean, it is uncertain, and I'm very curious to see what that's going to be like. I think as a player in this situation, there might be some guys saying, hey, like you said, this is uncertain times. I don't know, you know, what team's budgets are going to be like and all this kind of stuff. Unless you're one of the, you know, high-end superstar kind of guys, I think that, you know, GMs might have the opportunity to go bargain hunting a little bit, especially when you have, you know, you're the Nashville Predators and you have a team like you do, and the city and the building and the fans and all the things that Nashville has to offer as a team. I think you could go out and maybe be selective and probably could get, you know, a couple good deals out there. And I think a lot of teams will be looking to do that. But again, just like, you know, just like we talked about David Poile talking to 10 GMs trying to increase maybe the urgency and things like that, it all depends on, you know, the interest for that given player. And I just really feel that Nashville could be a very appealing destination for a lot of players, the way that their roster is constructed right now, the potential openings in the lineup, the opportunity that they could have coming here if he is a player that, you know, David and John Hines are really interested in. So I think there could be some opportunity to get a couple bargains here in the offseason, because I think players will want to sign and get deals done and not wait around and try to hit the home run.
Yeah, I saw Lou Lamoriello, who was a great bargain shopper, kind of like David Poile. He said, I think there's going to be a lot more players available than you think. So this is going to be a really intriguing thing. It might start on draft night. And Mace, here, share this with us. I know you had a chance to have a couple of great conversations with Roman Josi since he's won the Norris, some of which we saw some clips of. But Roger Federer from Switzerland, you know, the number one sports icon in Swiss history, right? He took the time to congratulate Roman Josi. And I think you, in your conversation with Roman, you had a chance to ask him his background of how well he knows Roger Federer. Well, like, we've always kidded him. Like, there's Roger Federer, and then Roman, are you second to Roger in Swiss fame? You know, hockey is pretty big over there, but he talked about the first time that he ever met Roger Federer. That was pretty cool.
It was really cool. It was because, he did come on. And he gave Roman a big congratulations. I asked him, look, is he just doing this because you guys are both Swiss, you know, Swiss-born and all that kind of stuff? Are you guys boys? And he said that he met him when Roman was 18. And he said he was so nervous and so, you know, intimidated. This is like the biggest star in Switzerland. And he just said that he was blown away with how comfortable he made everybody around him feel and how humble Roger was, and just raved about how he treated people. And really, it sounded like Roman was describing himself. You know, so we kind of joked around that they make him pretty good over there in Switzerland. But No, it's really cool. And you know, Rogers watched him play, and Roman's went to watch Roger play quite a bit. So it's a pretty cool thing. And you can see there was a lot of admiration, I think, on both sides of the relationship there when Roger gave his heartfelt congratulations to Yossi for winning the Norris Trophy. And then you could just see how much Roman really respects Roger. And that says a lot about a guy that's, you know, one of the biggest sports stars ever, you know, obviously ever played tennis, but to ever any sport, he really is one of the most, you know, famous guys in the world, in the sporting world. And to hear that, you know, he's got those kind of humble characteristics and treats everybody like that was pretty cool to hear. But, you know, Roman's the exact same way. So it was pretty neat to hear him talk about Roger Federer like that.
We're talking to Chris Mason of the Nashville Predators, a TV analyst alongside Willie D on Fox Sports Tennessee. What do you how beneficial is it to somebody like Yakov Trenin, Ellie Tolvanen, that, you know, they've been loaned out to the KHL, they're getting some playing time. These are two young guys that David Poile has referenced of being a big, having a bigger role on this team moving forward with some of the names leaving, and Trenin gets rewarded with a 2-year contract. But how big is that going to be for them to get some experience?
It's huge. You got to play. I mean, especially when you're young. They're in prime development years. They're going to be getting on the ice with some of the best players outside of the NHL. It's a very good league, playing against some grown men, high caliber players, a lot of skill. Obviously, it's a little bit different over there. Believe it or not, the KHL is actually a really defensive league, so they're going to, you know, be able to work on that side of the game as well. But I think for these guys to be playing, especially if I'm the Preds right now, and these are a couple players that I'm considering on my roster, I want them playing. I want them. I know you risk, you know, you take the chance to risk injury, but you know, if that's you know, doesn't happen, these guys get an opportunity to develop and work on their game. And then by the time, you know, training camp rolls around, these guys are, they're mid-season form, and you want players like that, you know, coming into your team and, you know, competing for a job. And again, just, I'm sure they'll be keeping good tabs on both of these guys. I think you can watch all the games on TV or streamed anyway, but I think it's really important for guys, especially, you know, Trenin, who's, I'm so happy with that signing. I think he's an impact player, and I think he's got a lot of growth up in his game, especially on the offensive side of things in the NHL level. The more he plays, the better he seemed to get. And then Ellie Tolvanen, you know, we've seen flashes maybe of what he can do here and there, but not enough to really make me think, yeah, this kid's a star, although he has the talent, and his development has come, you know, a little slower than everybody had hoped for, but it's coming. He seems to keep getting better and better, and having these guys play over there will just continue that growth.
And then a non-Preds one. The Rangers announced today they're buying out Henrik Lundqvist. We know what he's meant to that team, but as somebody that played the position and you've watched him over the years, what has Henrik Lundqvist meant to the league? And I'm not saying this is it for him, but, you know, obviously the end of an era with the Rangers.
Oh, man. He's, you know, he's one of those guys, King Henrik. You don't have a nickname like that. If you're average, or you're not a good person or ambassador for the game. And every time you think of the New York Rangers, that's the guy I think of, you know, for the last however many years. He's been the backbone of that club, and, you know, he helped them get to the final the one year that they did, and he's helped them keep them competitive through the rebuild. I mean, he's been through it all with that team, and he showed great loyalty. You know, he could have asked for trades a few years ago when the team started the rebuild, but he wanted to stick with them. And it really, I get it's a business. But I would feel, you know, it's like if the Preds bought out Pekka Rinne, you know, how would that feel? It just doesn't feel right to have that, to see that in the headlines. But he's he is the New York Rangers right now, and it's an end of an era. And it always comes to an end eventually, but it's tough to see it happen like that to such a great goaltender over the years, one of the best to ever play the game, and, you know, such a great ambassador for the Rangers. It's tough to see. But, yeah, hopefully it's not the end for him. It was a tough couple of years here for King Henrik in New York. But they got those young guys coming up, so I guess they had to make a move.
Do you think it's it? I mean, do you think he actually plays another year? Do you think he's been there, done it? He's accomplished everything he needs to accomplish?
I mean, I guess it just depends on, you know, obviously it's tough for a player to say, all right, you know, I've done pretty good. I want to shut her down. Like, if he can still keep playing and he can find a situation that he would be okay with, in terms of maybe not being the number one guy. I know he's, you know, had to deal with that a little bit at times the last couple of years with their young goaltenders coming in and, you know, stealing some ice time and a lot of it actually, and they're really good. But if there's a situation out there that he could find, you know, look at teams, look at Dallas. You need two guys. You have to have two guys. You know, very rare are you going to see the Montreals where it's just Carey Price, basically. You know, there's not many teams that just have that situation anymore. You need a couple guys that are able to carry the load, and there's a lot of teams that don't have, you know, a Carey Price or a Vasilevsky that can, you know, that can run the show, run the table the whole time. So if he can find a situation that he would be going with, I'm sure he'll have some opportunity. Just matters if, you know, if he's okay with that and he wants to do that. Maybe he doesn't. Maybe he said, you know what, if I remember Paul Kariya, he had a little injury problems, but he said, if I can't be the best that I feel my ability is, and I don't have a situation like that, I don't want to play just because of his expectations on himself are so high. So there are guys that play at that level that feel like that. But I'm sure he could, if he wanted to, find somewhere to go.
Well, if he just wants to stay in the area, he can go play for the Islanders and probably play another 5-6 years with their luck with goaltenders.
There you go. Exactly. Good point.
Hey, great stuff as always. We've appreciated all of our talks with you throughout this year, but we will definitely talk to you soon. Thanks for doing this. Have a great rest of your day.
All right. Thanks. Love you guys.
Love you too. C-Mace said is Chris Mason, Willie's partner in the television booth, former Predators goaltender, and, of course, does a bang-up job on television with Willie on Fox Sports Tennessee, and he is a delight to talk to every single week. I'm going to ask you guys if you noticed something that we didn't get a chance. I was going to bring it up yesterday, but obviously we got sidetracked with kind of this big story with the Titans, but just wanted to bring up something on this front as we kind of wrap up the hockey season, see if you noticed it after the Lightning won the Stanley Cup. We'll do that on the other side. Tim Hasselbeck at 1 o'clock. You're listening to Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Well, as we know, the Stanley Cup is in the books. The Tampa Bay Lightning are the champs. We would have addressed it a little bit yesterday, but there was kind of, you know, this story that was going on in our market. Kind of changed plans yesterday. Yeah, but we need to go on and finish up some business, and that business is our picks. I mean, we need to close the book on that, finalize that, and I want to bring up something that I noticed after they won on Monday night.
Okay.
See if you guys picked up on that. But first, let's start with the picks. Willie Donick picked the Dallas Stars. And we know that is the incorrect pick. He finishes the entire playoffs with the qualifying round with a record of 13-10. Your thoughts, Willie?
14-9 would have sounded so much better. I rode the Stars train one round too far. You know, I was conflicted, and
but
I
you
just
didn't pick
went
Dallas.
With the,
you picked Vegas in the conference final. You didn't pick Dallas.
I know, but I came back to Dallas thinking I made a mistake.
You jumped
going against
on.
Them. It was the team of I bought into the team of destiny thing, even though I didn't think they were the better team. That's why I picked them against. I picked Vegas against them.
Yeah, you did like should've, I did. You jumped on.
Should have used the same logic with Tampa. Tampa's just a deeper, better team.
Okay. Chase, who just jumped out, to a big old lead, was first two rounds, qualifying round in the first round, just, I mean, crushing it. But to say he was sputtering down the stretch is putting it mildly, as you struck out on both the conference games. And unfortunately, you struck out on your Stanley Cup winner. You had Dallas as well, but speaking of 14-9, Willie would have liked to have seen 14-9. You do, sir, indeed finish with a 14-9 record. So 14-9 for Chase, 13-10 for Willie. Chase, your thoughts?
Yeah, I definitely started off hot. But I was like Willie. I jumped on the bandwagon and had a little fun with the song. No, Elijah, you don't have to play it. Had a little fun.
There you really? Go. You don't get to play it when they lose, Elijah. Turn that crap off.
Just one more time. Just for all time.
You're going to make people mad.
Just so everybody knows, I did not call for it that time. He did that on his own.
I went rogue. I'll admit.
You did.
I went rogue.
You did. You went rogue. But, hey, I'll take 14-9. Congrats to Tampa. Darren, you were spot on with your analogy, which I'm sure you will praise yourself in just a second. But
yeah, we're getting to that. We're getting to my praise in just a moment.
Yeah, because Willie and I will just sit back and listen. But 14-9, all right, I'll take it.
Well, we'll start with this praise. While I came out of the gates stumbling, bumbling, and fumbling, because I was pathetic with my picks, I did get stronger as the playoffs went along. I nailed both the conference games with Dallas and Tampa, and I did pick Tampa to win it all. So at least I saved face a little bit, and I finished above 500. So 12-11 for the playoffs. I'll take that, considering in the qualifying round I was a very, very low 2-6, which was absolutely pathetic.
And no place to go but up.
Finished strong. I did. I had no place to go but up, and I finished strong, and I finished with a 12-11 record, which still puts me dead last. So congratulations to both of you. You were better pickers than me.
You're above 500.
But I was above 500.
You should have made a rule of double points for the conference final and the Stanley Cup. You know, some brackets you do that.
No,
you could have pulled that.
This is a straight record.
Yeah.
A straight record.
I think Willie was saying to make it interesting, and I would have.
You would have benefited from that.
Yeah,
I would not have, so that's why I say no.
So I referenced this many times when we were kind of talking about the games, the playoff games, and in particular the Tampa Bay Lightning. I referenced them as, why did I keep picking Tampa late? What was my analogy? What did I compare them to?
Virginia.
Virginia of college basketball, right?
Yep.
Did anybody happen to see John Cooper's interviews after they won the Stanley Cup final? That whole night when he's making his rounds on the presser, Scott Van Pelt, SportsCenter Scott Van Pelt.
Did he reference Virginia?
Not only did he reference it, he was wearing a Virginia Cavaliers college basketball hat.
Interesting.
Oh, was he?
So it was inspiration.
No. I didn't.
He took that to the bubble with him. He's had it the whole time. In fact, it's been a quiet theme behind the scenes. He said nobody in the team even knows anything about college basketball. He said nobody even had a clue who Virginia is, especially, you know, Victor Hedman, you know, these Swedes and these guys from over in Europe. They have no clue. He's like, they have no idea of college basketball. He's like, but this thing came to the bubble with me. And he said he's been holding on to it ever since they got eliminated. This has been his theme. And I had never heard that before. And I don't think anybody else knew it. But he openly talked about how Virginia inspired him, and that was going to be his motivator coming back the next season, that he wanted to be like Virginia. He wanted his team to respond to a terrible, terrible defeat with high expectations and followed up the next year by winning it all. How about that?
You read his mind.
I had never heard that. I don't know if anybody had heard that. I don't know if that was out there at all. He acted like it wasn't. Like this has been kind of the thing in the room and kind of the running joke, because he laughed saying, you know, basically my team didn't even know they don't even know college basketball. Forget knowing the Virginia Cavaliers. They're on Virginia. No clue.
And I wonder how Coach Bennett and how many of the Virginia Cavaliers even know much about hockey.
He referenced Tony Bennett. He said, I don't know him. He goes, but I got a lot of respect for him, and I got a lot of respect for how they handled.
They need to talk.
Yeah. No, I suspect that'll happen, right? I suspect that will definitely take place, you know, now that he's into his offseason, because he talked a lot about Virginia in his interviews after winning the Stanley Cup final. I just thought that was interesting.
Yeah, I didn't catch any of that. I mean, and truthfully, I did. You know, I was watching the Monday night game as well. So as soon as it was over, I was flipping back and all in on watching Pat Mahomes do his thing, or Patrick Mahomes do his thing. Sorry to Patrick's mom, because apparently she corrected the Monday night crew for that. But no,
his dad was known as Pat Mahomes for all those years when he's pitching.
But
for the Mets among teams.
Yeah, well, thank you, Willie. But I did not notice that. It's a cool story, though.
Yeah, I was
sounded
bored.
Like it was his own little thing that he kind of did for himself.
Yeah, but it wasn't a secret within the walls. Like, it was kind of their little theme.
Sure.
Which I thought was really interesting that he'd done that, and he admitted that he had never met Tony Bennett. It's not like they had some, you know, relationship where they, you know, they were friends away from their playing surfaces, you know, away from what they do. He said he's never even met him. But I just thought that was really interesting. I got bored with Lamar Jackson's play and how pathetic Baltimore's offense was, and so I focused in on that.
Well, it's a great sports story sometimes when there are big upsets. Like, we love big upsets. But it's also you have to appreciate a team that is in a window where, you know, they're the one of the best teams, if not the best team, and does get it done. Like, even the great Golden State Warrior teams were like, they're going to win it. They got the best team. You know, like the Heat, it still is an accomplishment to win it, and especially for the Lightning, because they hadn't won it, right? In this window, they've been among the best teams, if not the best team in people's mind, and they hadn't won it. So that's pretty satisfying, and to come back from adversity the way they did it, that you can appreciate that as a sports fan.
Yeah, you say the word upset. There were a lot of people upset Monday night about a certain thing that happened with the football game, but, you know, need overs to hit.
I was not aware of that.
Yeah, the over under was 54.5.
And I did see some stuff on Twitter where they said the sports books, that was a difference of a whole lot of money being exchanged.
Damn kickers.
Wasn't there there was a missed kick, right?
There was two field goal and a missed extra point.
Yeah, what was up with Buckner? I mean, he was awful. After the week before, he was the star.
Yep.
Yeah, and it was obviously the main storyline was the two, you know, the last two MVPs going head to head. But a sub storyline that I noticed people put out there was the two best kickers in the league, you know, from an accuracy standpoint. And then you have Bucker just missing.
I do wonder if now these smart coordinators, these smart teams, this film of Kansas City and what the Titans did to Baltimore, I wonder if this is going to be the way to slow down Lamar Jackson moving forward, if the book is going to be out on him now. Because it does seem like there is now a way. By the way, Kansas City at the end of that game, what were they doing? They're just bringing the house. Mm-hmm. And Baltimore had no answers at all, and neither did Lamar. You bring the house on Mahomes, you're toast.
Well,
you can't do it. Like he will just—he'll burn you. Like, you can't. But Lamar doesn't feel that way. Feels different. Feels like if you get to him, you apply the pressure, bad things happen to Baltimore's offense.
That's where he's going to have to evolve his game. We always talk about Russell Wilson. Russell Wilson had to evolve his game, change it up. Now he's one of the best quarterbacks in the league. And I've been one of those, and I know you have too, Darren. We've talked about this on the show. I got to see it again with Lamar. Last year was a tremendous year, good, you know, awesome team. He won the MVP, but
what's the follow up look like?
Right, when the league figures you out, can you figure out the league and how to change? And so far, at least with Kansas City, which really that's where they got to measure themselves against, we haven't seen it yet.
It is only one game, and that did bring their overall efficiency down. But I feel like it is one game that I'm not ready to go out and say they figured him out per se, or they figured the offense out. I'm going to wait and see before I say that. But you guys are certainly not the only ones bringing that up. It is called into question because it looked so bad.
It was
bad. They really struggled in that game. It's been a while since they've struggled like that. Even in the playoff game against the Titans,
yep.
The Titans made a lot of key plays, but they still move the ball much better in that game than on Monday.
Rhett's just getting thrown out at third. Nice play.
Yeehaw!
Nick Castellanos trying to go first to third, and a really nice throw with the outfield. Who's that? Is that Duvall out there?
That's in the air. Wow.
And also, not the left fielder running that's towards Duvall. Left center. Yeah, that's Adam Duvall, Nashville resident Adam Duvall, the former Louisville pretty. Cardinal.
Who has had a tremendous September, but really season overall.
Yeah,
had 11
and he's, in, the, he's in there for his bat. He had 11 home runs in September, which is the most in the league. But he's running away from the play. He's running up to towards center field, turns back and throws it to third and nails Nick Castellanos. And it looks like it's going to be very hard to score runs against Max Fried and Trevor Bauer. Not a lot of hard-hit balls in that game so far.
Been a great pitcher's duel.
Fried, they're in the sixth inning, and Freed's pitch count is 64.
Well, they're mowing him down. Bauer struck out five straight at one point.
All right, we'll take a break, come back, and wrap up the third hour. Don't forget Tim Hasselbeck coming up at 1 o'clock. More of Darren, Donick, and Chase next on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Don't forget to tune in to Saturday's College Football Game of the Week on ESPN 94.9. That's presented by Gary Force Acura. This Saturday's game will be a little SEC tilt between Texas A&M and Alabama. Kickoff is at 2:30 p.m. Check that out. We had a really good conversation with Derek Mason yesterday. I guess next week we've got to ask him about Ken Amato. Well, that's what we got to do.
Yeah, for sure.
They've got a big game against LSU. Trevor Bauer beating his chest. They've got a big game against LSU. I would suspect an LSU team that is probably not going to be very happy, and they're getting one of the best defensive players in the country back, Darryl Stingley, so junior, and we'll see how LSU bounces back from getting it handed to them by Mississippi State's offense on Saturday. And we'll see what happens in that game against Vanderbilt. And they will allow some of the students back in for that contest. Don't forget, we will have our Silly Underdog picks tomorrow. Excited about that as we will review, make our selections at high noon. We want you to play along with us as well. We want those numbers up. We need you to play along. You've been so good over the years, and we want that to continue. Remember, you get three games. And you can use it in college football or on Sundays in the NFL. Any combination that you like. But play along this week's winner will receive a Burger Republic gift card. And just go to thegamenashville.com. Or you can go to ESPN The Game Nashville mobile app and sign up and play along with us. Got some people that will be happy tomorrow at noon. Actually, everybody but one that's gotten X's all year so far. The defending champ.
The sheriff? The new sheriff in town?
Just saying. Defending champ hasn't won a game yet. Did I just say that out loud? I did.
You have. You have, because he's not here to defend himself, so, you know, let's
exactly. That's what's fun. Willie, get everybody caught up to speed on what we've learned today. We played Mike Vrabel's press conference at 10:35, what we've heard from the league, what we learned from Mike Vrabel. On this continuing saga between the Titans and the Steelers.
Well, earlier this morning, it was reported by ESPN and others. I think Tom Pelissero from NFL Network, is that his outlet? And Dan Graziano both reported there was one additional Titan that tested positive for COVID to go with the other three players who were revealed the day before. The NFL, right as our show was starting, came down with the announcement. In fact, it was actually reported by Diana Russini from ESPN prior to the league officially putting out there that the Titans-Steelers game has been postponed, but they are looking at Monday or Tuesday of playing the game. Mike Vrabel spoke at 10:35, did a press conference, did say some of the players are slash employees are experiencing flu-like symptoms, nothing out of the ordinary. They hope and feel like everybody's going to be fine, but there are some people dealing with some stuff. It's not asymptomatic, as was reported the day before. He did say that through Dr. Alan Sills from the league and communication with the league office, that the team is able to have their players who are injured come into the facility, which was going to be closed until Saturday completely. They have access to go in with limited personnel to get injury treatments, which is important for Taylor Lewan, Adoree Jackson, A.J. Brown, to name three important guys. He said quickly, no one is to blame. It's a personal situation. They're concerned first and foremost about the safety of the people that have tested positive, the entire team, and, of course, all the families and people around them. It sounds like he hopes that if everything checks out in another round of testing or so, maybe in another day they'll find out more. But he said there is a possibility that they could come back to the facility before Saturday, and that would help them prepare for the game on Monday. He said there is a possibility it could be later than Saturday, and they might have to play on Tuesday. So right now they're doing the best they can to prepare. It'll be all Zoom meetings today for the Titans. They can't practice together as a team. Kevin Byard said he'll be jogging around his own neighborhood to try to stay loose. But he said, Mike Vrabel, that he feels confident the league will give them ample time to practice before they play the game against the Steelers. So that's in a nutshell what has happened today. And there will be a new long snapper, by the way, because the guys that are on the COVID list, he said none of them will have a chance to play in this game.
Yeah, we're still waiting to find out the fourth guy on the fourth player that tested positive, but still some
two of the three are starters, and Daquan Jones and Bo Brinkley, yep, who was the long snapper. The other guy was a practice squad guy.
Yeah, and if you go to, I will point this out to people. If you go to the Titans website and you click on the roster, they have a good job of, you have your normal roster, you have your injured reserve, you have the practice squad, but then they separate it. There is a practice squad COVID-19 list. There is a reserve COVID-19 list for the actual roster. So they do a good job of giving you that information, and that was something that, you know, Mike Vrabel brought up, that they are required to release the players, the names of the player the test positive, but not coaches or team personnel. And so he would not divulge that information, only to say that he was not one of those, as Willie pointed out in the recap. So a lot of questions still, but I guess it could be worse. The NFL could have come out today and said, nope, not going to play. Don't know when they're going to play again. But that was not the case.
We also spoke to John Roberts from Sirius XM NASCAR channel, who lives here in town, covers NASCAR for them, about in the first hour of the show, about some news concerning the schedule for next year, and more importantly, what that schedule means for our market.
Yes, so here's what we know. It is looking like, and it's pretty much been confirmed, because I did tweet out, looking forward to Father's Day weekend at Nashville Super Speedway, and they said, we hope you have that written down in pen on your calendar. So June 20th would be the Cup race, Father's Day weekend here in Nashville. That date coming from Dover Motorsports, one of their dates. So we do know that. Tracks are kind of announcing as they go. The full schedule is going to come out later this afternoon. They've been doing this in pieces. But I guess the big thing that stands out to me, they're adding road courses. I mean, they're going to be a ton of road courses on the schedule, including Road America, which is in Wisconsin. They're going to host the July 4th weekend race for the Cup Series, and I would assume the Xfinity Series. Circuit of the Americas, which is a fairly new road course in Austin, Texas. SMI runs that. They are moving a points race from the Texas Motor Speedway to that. The All-Star race goes to the Texas Motor Speedway. It will not return to Charlotte. Indy is going to host a doubleheader weekend with IndyCar. Indianapolis is going to host with IndyCar and have the Cup Series on the road course and not the oval. Darlington gets two races again. Atlanta gets two races again, which that's a little bit of a head-scratcher for me, because attendance hasn't been great at the Atlanta Motor Speedway.
All Atlanta has done is lose sporting events. Why you would go back, I mean, it just makes no sense. Like, they've proven Why do they think it's going to be different? Why do they think?
Well,
Atlanta
they're wanting
two
to build. They're wanting to build. I guess a casino, or they're wanting to do a lot of things over there, and they feel like having two races will help that. That was some of the tweets I was reading. I have no idea the logic in all of that, because I've been to Atlanta. I enjoy the race there, but the attendance wasn't very good. People just, I mean, you guys know Atlanta is a weird sports town. So I don't really understand it, but they're taking a race away from Kentucky. So Kentucky will not host races next year. Darren, you and I have been there. So we know what the lay of the land is like there. And then Chicagoland will not host races next year. So I love the idea that they're going to Darlington twice. I never agreed with the move to take a race away when they did. They hosted three races this year due to COVID. They'll have two next year, and I think that that's a historic place that they need to go back to. And also running a dirt race at Bristol, which I'm not really sure about that. That's going to work.
How long has the Cup race been at Kentucky Speedway?
I think 2012 was the first year they had
one. I thought it was 2011.
Or 2011, somewhere in there. Because if you remember...
My point is, it's less than a decade. Like, that makes me really sad. Like, Speedway is toast. I mean, you know, you both... Well, Willie, you haven't been there. We've been there. It's in the middle of nowhere. You've probably passed it if you've gone that stretch between Louisville and Cincinnati.
Oh, many times.
Well, there's nothing there. And then boom, there's a track. You see it right off the interstate.
See it in the distance there.
Yeah, you can see it in the distance. But, I mean, they've had a Cup race there for less than a decade, and now that thing is toast. I mean, it's just going to be like Gladeville was.
Yep. A lot of weeds.
Sad. Just, weeds.
Yeah.
Tumbleweeds.
And the things that they went through to get that race, you remember there was a lawsuit with NASCAR that they had been promised a Cup race, and they never got it, and... So they actually sued NASCAR, and that's how they got the race. And I want to say that Atlanta lost their date to Kentucky.
I think that sounds right.
If I'm not mistaken. So,
and their first Cup race was a disaster.
Yeah, remember? And so that would have been 2011.
It took forever to get in.
2011 would have been the first one, because Atlanta last hosted two races in 2010. So that fits that time frame. But I'm glad to see NASCAR have a more diverse schedule, and I think this is just the beginning. One thing that what I've seen from what is the unofficial schedule, but everybody pretty much thinks it's official, there's the one doubleheader weekend, which is Pocono. That's it. And you don't have midweek races. I think those come in 2022.
Guys, real quick, 10-second scoreboard update. Reds and Braves through six, scoreless. Great pitcher's duel, Trevor Bauer and Max Fried, our buddy Kurt Casale, friend of the show, doing a great job catching Trevor Bauer. A lot of big blocks. They had a guy on third there. Astros and Twins in game two. Scoreless bottom of the third. Marlins and Cubs about to get underway.
Tim Hasselbeck to kick off the fourth and final hour. That's next.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams Memorial Day sale and get 30% off paints and stains May 15th through the 28th. Whether you're refreshing your interior or exterior, we've got the colors to bring your vision to life. And with delivery, getting everything to your door is easier than ever. Shop online to have it delivered or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details. Delivery available on qualifying orders.